24/7 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. It is Thursday, October 24th, and I have an absolutely fantastic show for you today. Three great guests that I am excited to welcome. And as always, we sure do appreciate you being with us. First up, I have one of my favorite type of guests. I love interviewing teenagers. It just gets me so excited because they are the future. I have another incredible one to welcome today. Aria Salur is with us. We're going to talk about his book and podcast called The Exponential Edge. We will do a formal introduction in just a second. After that, we're going to welcome back our favorite Canadian entrepreneur, favorite environmentalist, Wayne Elliott, is with us today to talk about healthcare differently, strangely, because he's an environmentalist, but he's also an incredible healthcare advocate, and we're going to talk about his cross-country tour that he just did. He drove some 18,000 miles across Canada going to retail establishments that sell his healthcare products, the Strauss Natural products, and going door to door and helping sell them to the stores and helping the stores get more excited, giving them the insights that they need, all of that. An incredible old-fashioned way of going out there and building brand loyalty. We will talk about that. And then in the third block, we have Tony D'Urso with us. He is a podcaster and very successful author, but we're going to talk about fiction today. He has a new fiction product out. And so it's in the third part of the show, as we talk about, as always, in the third part, the funner stuff, the less work-oriented. And so we're excited for Tony then. All right, let's get started. Here we go. As I said, we have Aria Salur with us today, an incredible high school senior. He's also the star of his football team. I am excited to introduce you. Aria, welcome. How you doing?
Doing great, Jim. Thanks so much for inviting me on the show. And happy to talk about my book and my podcast, The Exponential Edge.
How old are you?
I'm 17 years old, going to turn 18 in December. So high school senior.
A senior, okay. And so looking forward to graduating and heading off to college. Mm-hmm. What do you want to study?
I want to study a mix of finance and data science, or economics and data science, because I want to do something with business. But I also want to have a skill that I can apply to any different field that I may be interested in joining.
Okay. So. Sounds like a great plan. And why write a book? Why at 17 are you writing a book? What was the why?
Well, the why started with my podcast. The podcast came first. So if you'll allow me to tell the story of the podcast and lead into the book.
Yeah, go.
All right. So, about a little more than a year ago, summer heading into junior year, like many kids of my age at the time, I was focused on figuring out what I wanted to do in the future, what major I wanted to do in college, and what job I might want to pursue. And also, like many of my fellow students and classmates, I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I talked to my parents, and what had started happening around that time is I started watching and listening to many podcasts. The podcasts that I had started listening to, they weren't actually about technology or industry. They were about sports and pop culture, the stuff that I did and the stuff that I was interested in. So I thought, I watched those podcasts and I thought, why not learn about possible topics, fields that I could get into, things that are going to see growth in the future, because obviously you don't want to get into a dying field or a declining field. Why don't I learn about this And from people who know what they're doing, right? People who are established in their industry and have years of experience and are very successful. So that's how the idea came to start my podcast, The Exponential Edge. And like I said, the aim of the podcast was to discuss with visionary CEOs, founders, CXOs, and eventually venture capitalists and private equity partners on topics, trends, and businesses that we're going to see exponential adoption in the coming decades. So as I started to build this podcast up, get more and more guests, whether it be organically through LinkedIn, as I started to build my LinkedIn, some people have approached me to be on my podcast, or whether it be starting out and getting connections through family and friends for guests on my podcast. As I started building this platform up, it started getting traction with not only industry professionals through LinkedIn, but also, surprisingly, kids in my school, which I wouldn't think a bunch of 17-year-olds would be interested in this sort of topic. But yeah, that was pretty surprising. So after about 20, 25 episodes, I started to realize that some people don't want to digest a 30-minute to 1-hour podcast episode, or they don't have the time, right? So some people want to digest shorter content, such as a reel on TikTok or Instagram, or what I started doing, which was LinkedIn blog posts, right? Like a 5 or 10 minute read where I just summarize an interview, the main points, and post it on LinkedIn for a short read. So at that point, I had made a few of these LinkedIn blog posts, and I thought, why not consolidate all of my podcasts and all the insights I've learned from my podcast into a short 170-page book that I can launch on Amazon or on Kindle and have people get for a $9.99 cost and read. Right. So that's how the book came to light. And since May is when I started writing and consolidating all that information for the book, rewatching my podcasts, consolidating the LinkedIn posts. Since May, I worked on the book. It started off slow at first, about a chapter every week and a half or 2 weeks. And then I actually got injured. I tore my Achilles in the middle of summer. Playing football, getting ready for the football season. And it was obviously pretty bad, but it accelerated my work on the book because I could feed that energy and that increased time into accelerating the process for the book. And it ended up getting published second or third week of September. So, yep, that's how the book came to light.
Congratulations, and an amazing story. You self-published, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, how hard self-published. Was that? Well, it actually wasn't like totally impossible because I had some help from my parents, and we actually used a platform called Upwork to hire a formatter and an agent, right? So the formatting was done for me, like the whole, how many pages is it? How many words per page? Table of contents. And then we also hired someone to design the cover art through Upwork. So that cost was around $300 total for the formatter and for the cover artist. And then we just used Kindle Direct Publishing, which is a really nice, pretty easy platform to use for anyone to self-publish their book on Amazon. So that whole process wasn't terribly difficult.
Well done. Congratulations. How much, and you know, don't share if you're not willing to, you didn't spend very much to have those services done on Upwork, right? And we're talking probably $100 or something like that, I would guess.
Yeah. Like I said, it was about $300. Total for the formatter and the cover. But I've made that back in the, pretty sure it's been a month since the book was released. So
excellent. Yep. Talk to us about a particular chapter. So I'm looking at the index now and the table of contents, and chapters are very, very short, but there's a lot of chapters, and some of the chapters titles, I'm not really sure what they are because I just don't know what the technology is. I'm just not smart enough to know what that tech means, you know, like the NIRAMAI and health or something, you know. I need better glasses for one thing, but I don't know what that is. And so these are some pretty high tech things that you are talking about. What does one chapter teach us about one of these topics?
Okay, so first off, I want to start off by saying that none of the chapters have to be read in any sort of order, right? So you can flip open to any of these chapters and you can just start reading. You have no prior information and you can learn about a topic. And it's about a 10-15 minute read per chapter, right? And then at the end of every chapter is a list of 5 to 10 key takeaways from the entire chapter. And the reason I did that was, one, is because in my podcast, I always ask the last question for every guest is, can you provide 5 key takeaways from our entire conversation today? So I thought, why not keep that same type of brand in my book, right? And then also, like I said before, digestible content. If somebody doesn't want to sit down and read a whole chapter, they can flip to the end of the chapter and just read those key takeaways. And another thing that I added in the beginning of every chapter is a quote that relates to me, my personal story through high school with injuries, with psychology, just my life in high school and my experience with the podcast. So you wanted me to share one chapter. I'll start off with chapter three. And chapter three has one of my favorite quotes from the entire book, which is, I believe it's a quote from Jerry Rice that says, to do what others can't, you must do what others won't, right? So how that relates to me is, I started this whole podcast. I started my LinkedIn. I built my LinkedIn up at an early age. And I feel as though a lot of other kids might not have had the same consistency as I have had with this. But the reason that I'm even on this interview right now and the reason that I have this book published is because of that consistency. So like Jerry Rice said, to do what others can't, you must do what others won't. So the idea of this this chapter three, is, let me just flip right here. It's, okay, so game changers, the future of biotech and healthcare, right? So I have, I believe, two guests in this chapter. One is a CEO from an Indian company called Niramai. What they do is they invent technology and thermal scans to detect breast cancer. And what makes them different is that they make breast cancer screening available and accessible to lower income areas and rural areas in India, which have never had such accessibility to breast cancer screening, right? And then the second company and the second person I interviewed in this chapter is Jay Srinivasan of Truvian Health, ex-CEO of Truvian Health. And what they are doing is they're making a product that is placed in pharmaceutical stores such as CVS, Rite Aid. And this product is basically a hub or like a panel that you can go sit down at and you can provide some sort of DNA for yourself, whether it be a small blood sample, a spit sample, something like that. And the actual panel has a bunch of chemical biomarkers in the panel. And once you provide that DNA sample, those chemical biomarkers read your DNA sample and they provide you with a health synopsis on early onset diseases, such as cognitive diseases like Alzheimer's or things like that. And then also heart diseases, metabolic diseases, all sorts of early onset diseases, right? So what that's doing is that's making prevention of these diseases way more efficient and more accessible to the general population. So those are the two guests I've interviewed and what they do in this chapter. And really, this chapter is about what I just said, catching this early onset of these diseases, because I'm pretty sure the first subsection of this chapter is on health or medicine 1.0 to 2.0 to 3.0. And if you want, I can explain that. It'll take a few minutes. I don't know how much time we have, but is it okay if I explain?
I'm more concerned about your football game than anything else, Arya. You're competing in homecoming tonight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, we are.
And I know you need to leave in about 2 or 3 minutes for that. So let's go somewhere else instead of learning about that one particular tech.
Okay.
How do you write a book? How do you get 170 pages done? How do you have the consistency to make that happen? A lot of adults can't do that. How do you do that?
All right. So like I said, it was the consistency that I had through the podcast that translated to the book. And starting out, it was very slow. It was, like I said, 1.5, 2 weeks to write one chapter. And at that pace, I probably wouldn't have finished the book until about now. Publishing would have taken a month or two more. But really, the really hard part about writing this book was, one, I wanted to make every chapter a certain theme, like you see. So that means I had to go through all of my podcasts, find every podcast that related to a certain theme. Some of them didn't even relate to, any obvious theme. So I had to figure out what parts of those podcasts I could put in to one of these themes. Right. So that was the hard part, going through all my podcasts about, I don't know, I would say almost 50 hours of podcasts. And taking notes on those podcasts, getting transcripts. And then even more difficult was taking those interviews and spoken conversations and translating that into a readable book with proper sentence structure, a proper theme, and a cohesive progression, right? I can't just transcribe my podcast into a book. That's not really how it works, right? So that was the most difficult part of the whole process, but like I said, it was pretty worth it at the end of it.
And last question, what are your marketing tips? How do you go about marketing?
All right, so this is actually kind of a weak spot for me. The only real marketing I've done is word of mouth to friends, posting on Instagram. And then my LinkedIn, I've been lucky enough to grow my LinkedIn to about 6,500 followers now. So I post all my podcast episodes on LinkedIn, all my book updates on LinkedIn, and I've gained a lot of traction through there. But I would suggest, just post on social medias, get a large social media following, start building up as early as you can, and just be consistent with it. That's really how you gain traction with people, is being consistent. So yeah, like I said, I'm not very well versed in marketing, but that's just how I went about it.
Well, congratulations. You've done an amazing job, and I am very impressed. I'm sure your parents are as well. I have met your father and spoken with him.
Yep.
And so, well done. How do we find out more, follow online, and get a copy of the book?
Yeah. So there is an Exponential Edge Instagram page. If you just search up Exponential Edge Podcast, it'll probably pop up. My LinkedIn, same as my name, Arya Salur. And I post all the updates on there, like I said. The book is on Amazon. You can buy a hard copy of paperback for $9.99, or you can buy a Kindle for about $1, right? Digital version. Yeah, that's about it.
Good luck in the football game, and thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you so much, Jim.
And we'll be right back.
School for Startups Radio hopes you will reach out to us if you have any questions or comments, or if you need help with your business at any stage, from concepts to exit. Jim accepts all connections on LinkedIn. He tweets from @EntrepreneurJim, and he responds to emails at james.beach@att.net. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the show.
We are back, and again, thank you so very much for being with us. It is time for our weekly dose of Wayne Elliott, again with us. I think for the 27th time. Wayne is an incredible Canadian entrepreneur in the environment space. He was the North America's premier ship recycler, taking big aircraft carriers and submarines and things like that and turning it into safe, reusable materials that we can go and put back into the system. And then along the way, he also figured out battery recycling was so critical and made huge process and improvements there, has several patents in the space, and just sold that company. Anyway, we are writing a book together, and this is part of our interview series. We are talking about different things every week. And so today we are diving a little bit more into the third part of his life. So not ship, not battery, but health. And we are talking about Strauss Naturals, a company that he is the owner of. Here is the conversation in process. Here we go.
I drove over 18,000 miles. That's 2/3 around the earth. I never left Canada. And what we did was work the stores all day and then drive to the next city at night, whether it was 3 hours away or 8 hours away. I didn't realize I got tired till I got home. I've unheard of for me, but I'm sleeping 6-7 hours a night for the first time in my life. I've never done that. So it's quite a trip. It was wonderful, really. I was so welcoming, the people in the health stores, without exception. I met probably 700 people, and just wonderful people. If you want to meet nice people, go into a natural health food store. Nobody's there to get rich, that's for sure. And knowledgeable, and I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting a lot of places to find young people or part-time staff that were just there to run the cash register if somebody bought something, but I didn't find that in one store of over 300. It was a great experience that way.
Well, great. I imagine that they're not getting as many visits from sales reps and things as they used to. So they probably appreciate the attention and the love.
Yeah, indeed. Since COVID, they don't see the sales reps. It's funny, it's not funny. I think it's very sad what happened arising out of COVID. The people shopping online and so forth, and it really hurt the retailers, and the health food stores were no exception. There was lots of them had to close, and the ones that were in malls really got hurt in Canada because they had three different shutdowns, and same with the restaurants and that. I don't know how you run a business when your staff's laid off and then they're back and then they're laid off again. And in America, apparently 250,000 food and beverage service workers changed jobs for something else. They just couldn't go it anymore. Everybody's got bills to pay. But I keep hoping that, just as I did with the environmental business, in the battery business, I was just sure, I call it the environmental clock, I was just sure it would tick around faster than it did. It took so many years, and still, there's a lot of lip service going on, but not so much actually being done about things. And sometimes politics is the problem for sure. But I thought the same thing with the health business, to be honest. Every single Schedule A disease is on the rise. The only growing industry in Canada is the health industry, new hospitals and not enough doctors, endless pharmaceuticals. And I've And I think that's true. So it's, if it's coming around, it's coming slow for people to consider alternative medicine. And of course, it's a fight with Big Pharma and Western medicine. If more people, this is my belief, and you couldn't change it if you had the whole army across the street telling me I was wrong, but if more people considered natural medicine, natural supplements and so forth, I mean, nature's never wrong. Nature's always right. Nature's all powerful. So it's an oxymoron that there'd be any resistance to natural things that cannot harm you. There'd be a lot less doctors needed, certainly a lot less drugs needed, a lot less hospitals needed, and that's not on the agenda, Jim. What's on the agenda is money, money, money. That's it. That's the whole deal. Doctors aren't evil, obviously. But, in all their training and all those years of high schooling, they spend 2 hours on alternative medicine. And what the rule is, they are not to talk about it. They surely can't recommend it. And what they're taught is, they don't know what it does when people are taking their pharmaceuticals, so just say no. In the meantime, all the danger, of course, is with the pharmaceuticals, and they admit that. Hence the long list of potential harmful effects. But anyway, it's frustrating to me, but there's really some wonderful people working that industry. I was so impressed. On my trip, I learned a lot. Tell you the truth, I didn't think so many people would be so knowledgeable and engaged, and compassionate. Really, that was the best part of the trip was the people.
Well, it usually is. Usually, people are the great thing that makes a place special, and so it's great that industry is so supportive. And how do they view you and Strauss, Wayne? Do they see you as a father figure and a support element?
Oh, for sure. That was wonderful too, because we would walk into the stores. We didn't have any appointments. I couldn't do that. I'd been 10 years doing this if I'd have tried to make appointments. So we just walked in cold, and nobody knew who we were. And they'd say, "Hello, can I help you?" And I'd say, "I'm Wayne. This is Corey from the Strauss Company." "Oh, Strauss. was the usual response. And then they were just immediately engaged with us. And that was wonderful. Strauss, everybody in the natural health industry knows that name. And, you know, the Strauss heart drops in particular, as I was told in many places, it's the most highly respected product in the natural health industry is the Strauss heart drops. The one that saved my life, saved my dad, saved a ton of people I know. And so that was pretty cool. You know, I didn't appreciate how well known Strauss is in Canada. I wish it was better known in the United States, and we're working on that. We're working on that, but you know, the other thing is that, you know, 99% of people listen to their doctors, and understandable. And if the doctor, this really bothered me, blew me away. A dear friend of mine, he's 82 years old. He got COVID last year. And he doesn't take any supplements. And I said to him, got to get your wife to go out and get your... I'll get her to go tomorrow. I said, it's 6 o'clock. She could go today. Now, Strauss doesn't make any of those products. We don't make supplements like vitamins and minerals. There's 1,000 companies that do. And so his wife went out and got them. Wouldn't allow him to take any until they saw the doctor the next day. And his doctor said to him, I don't want you to take those. And I was blown away, really. There's so much science, including Dr. Linus Pauling, 100 years ago, won 2 Nobel Prizes for his work on vitamin C and deficiencies. And now, and just in yesterday's news, a huge problem today, because of our foods not being natural, being genetically modified and sprayed with all these chemicals, they're determining that deficiency of vitamin C is today a huge problem causing much disease. It's like we didn't learn 100 years ago when that was proven. And but when this doctor told my friend, no, I don't want you taking any of that, I thought that was maybe the most arrogant thing I'd ever heard in my life.
I was afraid you were going to tell me that the man died before you could get the drug in him, which would have been a horrible irony. But that's even worse, that the doctor won't let him take the drugs. There's nothing, as you said, it can't do anything to make you, to harm you, right? It's not going to kill you. Right?
No, that's for sure. No, and we need them, Jim. Let's face it. You need. And it used to be, Jim Strauss used to say all the time that, like when I was young and there was only natural foods, the first GMO food was the tomato, and it was a horrible failure. You could play tennis with these tomatoes, and they were pink in color. They were called Everfresh here in Canada. And it was a big failure, but they've gotten pretty good at making them taste good. And these GMO foods, but Jim always used to say, Jim Strauss, that the natural foods that was all we had everything that we needed. And then when the soil became depleted, because we didn't let fields lay in fallow every few years to rejuvenate. If it wasn't in the soil, it wasn't into the foods and produce. And so if it's... today. You can't duplicate nature. It's impossible. We try in many ways. Take seedless things. Geez, when my boys were young, I bought the seedless green grapes. They tasted wonderful, sweet. No seeds. The kids didn't like the seeds. Well, that was about the worst thing I could have done, really. The seeds are so important. You can't reproduce anything without a seed. Not a human, a pine tree, a giraffe, nothing without a seed. So these seedless foods now cannot reproduce themselves. And I think it's pretty evil that they've put some seeds in genetically modified foods like some of the oranges. And that can only be to deceive us, because in the United States, unless a fruit has, I think it's a minimum 3 seeds, it must be called seedless. You know, people like me, they do their best to stay away from seedless foods. And the one big problem, Jim, is the food, the plant, has a very weak immune system, these genetically modified foods. And if the, you know, that's why all the chemicals now that have to be sprayed on the foods. The McCain company in Canada, famous for French fries, huge, huge company on the east coast of Canada. And one year, they went to genetically modified potatoes. And I guess there was tremendous loss that year in the crops, and they went back to natural potatoes. But because the food has no immune system, or a very weak one itself, what do you suppose it does to our immune system when we eat them? And, you know, I think that's the GMO foods, including the seedless foods, and all the man-made chemicals involved in our lives today, I believe are the cause of much disease like cancer. And so what's tough today is, since 93% of foods in the big chain grocery stores are or contain genetically modified organisms, it's next thing to impossible to eat 100% natural. I think the luckiest people around are the people that have a nice garden for themselves. And I've got a lot of old Italian friends that they have the original tomato seeds, and they keep some every year to replant next year's garden. They're the smartest people to get as much natural food as they can. And I mean, the fact that with all the money spent on Western medicine, and every Schedule A disease being on the rise, every single one, heart disease, cancer, all of them, high blood pressure, is evidence, you know, that we've really taken some wrong turns. But things seem to happen slowly, so, I keep hoping that, just like the environmental clock, I'd always hoped it would spin faster. It's very slow. And of course, when you have such powerful groups behind the status quo, it's that much more difficult. I used to start when I gave lectures years ago for Strauss, I'd start everyone by saying, if the doctor told you to go home and eat you know what, you'd do it. And the people would laugh, and I'd say, no, you'd do it. You know you would. And then I would start the lecture. And it's true, you know. This doctor told my friend, no, I don't want you taking those vitamins. And so they didn't. He didn't take them. And I don't know. It's a mad world these days, Jim. It's a mad world, and that's just part of the madness as far as I'm concerned.
It is, and the people who are the sane ones are the ones getting in trouble for calling out the insanity around us. And so
that's right.
It's a hard fight these days. Wayne, we need to wrap it up, and I look forward to talking to you again. I'm glad you're home, and give the wife and dog a hug for me.
All right, Jim. Thank you.
All right. I'll talk to you next week. Take care.
You bet.
Bye. Right, bye-bye.
Well, that's a wonderful question, actually, Jim.
Oh my gosh, I love the opportunity to do this. Thank you, Jim.
Wow, that's a great one.
You know, that is a phenomenal question. That's a great question, and I don't have a great answer.
That's a great question.
Oh, that is such a loaded question, and that's actually a really good question.
School for Startups Radio.
We are back, and again, thank you so very much for being with us. I'm very excited to welcome back to the show our good friend Tony D'Urso. He has been on the show two or three times before. He is a number one podcaster with 45 million downloads. The Tony D'Urso Show, you can find it all over the place, including Voice of America. He is also the author of several books, and today we're excited to talk about some of the fiction that he has done. Tony, welcome back. How are you doing?
Jim, thank you so much for having me on your show. So good to be with you again, my friend. I thank you.
It is our pleasure. So, fiction. Why, with all of the things you have going on, an incredibly successful career, why waste the time in fiction? Or is that the dream?
Well, that's a beautiful question, because I am known for nonfiction. I have multiple best-selling books: Easy Sales Procedures, Elite Entrepreneurs, The Disciplined CEO, and so forth. And so when my dear friend SKR came to me some years ago with this story idea, I was like, nah, I'm well known, and I'm establishing myself as real, as serious, if you want to use that word, and nonfiction. But if I have a co-author with a book and it's a good book, it can make sense to have both our names on. So that's what happened. We wrote a fiction book, and it's called Iman of Atlantis. Volume one is called Bitten, B-I-T-T-E-N. And just to give you an idea, a super simple one-sentence summary, it's the rulers of this nation, of these nations involved, are bitten for the greed of having gold and amassing more gold. And they grow, they develop this greater lust for power. And that's what Bitten is all about. And to give you an idea, the second book is called Ruthless, coming out in a few months, so you can kind of get an idea of what's going on with this. So we decided to write this adventure story. And I thought, you know, this would be really good, because here I am, preaching to people, work and get things done. And Jim, you know this well. Us entrepreneurs, we can do the 100 hours a week. You know, we're no stranger to it.
That is true. We just try to get away from that as fast as possible. And, you know, the goal with the whole being an entrepreneur is to get back to the 40 hours, I would hope, or even under that. What's that crazy guy who wants us to work 4 hours a week? I always thought that was ridiculous. What did you think of that theory, Tony, the 4-hour work week? Tim Ferriss.
It's sort of like telling people there's gold in them dar hills, and to go out and change your life and go somewhere and work harder. And the 4-hour work week comes after you've spent years and years or decades
exactly
putting something together. Then fine. But you're not going to start that way. And that's where this book comes in to kind of segue back to that. You got to take a break sometimes, because you can't work forever. You can't go 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. You got to take a break. You got to rest your mind. And this book's going to just help take you away in a different adventure, so you recharge when you go back to work on Monday.
What would you compare this to? What author or genre that I would know would best give us an idea of what this book is like?
Jim, we had the Toluca Times review the book. They are a magazine for the Entertainment Center in Hollywood. They're in Burbank, and they said themselves, it is a unique world in the tradition of Tolkien. They love the book, and they said that there are harrowing twists. There are characters that you can fall in love with. They just love the book, and they were very, very kind. So they already picked it for us. It's like Tolkien.
Well, you can't get any better than that. That's about as good as you could hope for. So
I would be honored if more people think that way.
Yes, exactly. So is your dream to have a movie made of it?
No, actually, my dream is just to have people enjoy it, take a break, and just have a good read. I've never really thought of a movie. It's a one sentence to say, oh, let's, you know, what about a movie? But it's so much work. And the one danger about the movie, Jim, is the story will change. The characters will change. And we don't want that to change. We want people's imagination to create the story and create the world. And so at this point, we're saying, no, we just don't think it's something we want into a movie.
And publishing, did you go self-publishing, traditional? What are your thoughts on that controversy?
I've used multiple publishers in the past for my book, and I have a company called Jet Launch, which publishes the book. And you need, when you do more than one book, you need someone or a company that knows all these things, what settings and where to put it. And, you know, how does a bookstore get your book? And you need a publisher that knows how to get it in Ingram's and knows how to get it there. You can self-publish to a degree, but I got to tell you, it's extremely limiting. And I'm telling you, my first book was self-published and it didn't go anywhere. And it taught me that if you go into the forest, way out in the woods, and you put a book there on a pedestal, and you know, you come back there months later, it's still going to be there, except it's going to have been rained or chewed on by animals. In other words, it doesn't go anywhere by itself. You got to have a machine to help push it out. And you need people with experience that know all the ins and outs. So I'm very fortunate to have a publisher that is very experienced. They have produced a lot of number one books, which, by the way, this book made number one in multiple countries. And I'm very honored for that a lot of people like the book and the reviews are pouring in. So I really think that understand, get your first book out, self-publish it. But I think a publisher is going to do you a lot more justice if you're serious about it, Jim.
And how do you find a publisher? How have you done that in the past, Tony?
I've done it very poorly. I've written letters. I've had a publisher that wouldn't even talk to me because my self-published books weren't high enough in volume. I've had all sorts of things. So I think it really becomes down to the relationship. Anybody can promise you anything to take the money out of your pocket. That's the bottom line. If you have a relationship, for example, I know the publisher. I've interviewed him before on my show. They've interviewed me before on their podcast, I think, or one of their affiliated podcasts. And it wasn't until another 1-2 years later that I even thought about having them do my book. So a relationship really helps, because there are tricks in what can be promised you, and you may think you're going to get a lot more than is promised to you. So I'm happy if somebody is very serious, I can connect my publisher with you just to help you out. This is not an affiliate deal. I don't make money from it, but just to help you out, be happy to help an aspiring novelist or book writer or nonfiction author get up there. It's what I can do. I'm at that stage of my life where I want to help more and more. And it's not about money, Jim. It's about helping.
How do you have Tolkien crazy ideas? You know, to someone who's not into the fantasy world, that could very closely resemble, you know, some things that are illegal, you know? How do you go off and have a fantasy like that and then take the idea and put it down into paper? How do you go about the process?
Well, a couple of years ago, many years ago, a dear friend, SKR, who is the co-author on the book, came to me with this idea, and we started working out. This is before, we started writing this, believe it or not, before the Lord of the Rings movies came out, I believe. We just started figuring out, who's this person? We started working out the characters. Who's this person, and who's this person, and why, and where are they, and who are these Aimen? They're mythical, magical beings. They have incredible power. They can turn things to gold. They can slow down time. Who are they? How did this happen? And we just started fleshing it out. And believe it or not, the story just wrote itself. But I have to tell you, this is different from Lord of the Rings. There's no rings. There are no dragons. What else? It's a bit different.
All right. Well, I'm sure it is. And what's your best piece of practical entrepreneurial advice real quick, Tony? We need to wrap it up, I see. What's your entrepreneurial obsession? I'll give you an example so you can think for a second. I'm always teased by the person who's starting a business, frequently just got out of Fortune 500. They're really excited about it. They have a corporate t-shirt logo on it already, polo shirt actually with a nice collar, and it's got the logo. And if you stop by the office, I'll give you one. My secretary will give you one. I don't know exactly what I'm going to be doing yet, but I already have a secretary and a logo. That's my pet peeve. Tony, what's yours?
I'm not sure if I know exactly where we're going with this, and I know that the time is short. I'll try to answer as best as I think. When I started, I was a nobody, and I got mentored. And I get mentored an hour a week by millionaires and billionaires who teach me whatever they can teach me in that hour a week. And I've used that information to help propel my podcast and my business. So if you listen to my episodes, there's a lot of incredible knowledge there. And all I want to do, all Tony wants to do inherently, is connect very successful people with the people that want to get there and help speed up that time by learning and by learning from the success of others. I hope that kind of answers your question.
Very, very well. How do we find out more? Follow online, get a copy of the book.
Jim, go to the simple thing, go to TonyDURSO.com. If you click on books, you'll see the Aimen of Atlantis book, which will take you to, we're on Amazon. And if you click podcasts, you'll see all my podcast episodes, such as I just interviewed Sean Nelson, the CEO of Lovesack. Amazing interview. It's going to help save you years and years on speeding up to your success. So there's things like that. So if you go to my TonyDURSO.com, you can click on books, click on podcasts, and hopefully that will take you to a lot of places. And if you want to email me, Tony@TonyDURSO.com, I'm happy to help as I can.
Fantastic. Tony, thank you so much for being with us. Love to get caught up, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much for having me on the School for Startups, Jim. I appreciate it.
We are out of time for today, but back tomorrow. Tomorrow, our guest is the guy growing coral. He just won the Earthshot Prize from the UN in Prince William. Tomorrow.